It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The shark, babe, has such teeth, dear, and it shows them pearly white. Just a jackknife has old Maggie Heath, babe, and it keeps it out of sight.
Welcome, everybody, to this latest episode of Macklin's Take. Hope everybody is well. A bit later this week than normal, because we thought we'd wait until we got stuck into Fight Week and bring you a preview of Fabio Wardley against Fraser Clark from Fight Week. And that's exactly where we are. Myself and Matt, we're in the Intercontinental, down in the lobby of the Intercontinental, attached to the O2, where back in the day we did many, many podcasts from here, just skulking around the foyer waiting for people to present themselves, which is exactly what we're doing here. If anybody walks past who we feel we can rope in, then we will. But Matt, we've just seen the press conference between Fabio and Fraser and the rest of the card, which is a really interesting card. And it all went off without incident. Alan Babich and Steve Robinson looked like they were pretty keen to get stuck into each other for a spell. But we're set for a good night on Sunday, because there's a lot of good matches. But the best one, as you always want it to be, is at the top of the bill.
Yeah, definitely. Like you say, there's some good matches on. I think Lawal and Vidal will be a good fight. I think Robinson and Alan Babich will just be absolute carnage for however long it lasts. I don't see it going the distance by any means. But you're right. All eyes ultimately are on the main event in what is an intriguing clash, particularly when you look at their route here. You know, you've got the very traditional sort of... good amateur Olympian, in fact, now a professional, against a guy in Fabio Wardley who's really come through a pretty unusual route, certainly to this level anyway, to be successful at this level. And he's the heavyweight British champion. You know, he came through it as I think white collar was his first ever fight. So he's on that basis, the initial just glancing at this without doing any sort of, you know, if you hadn't followed their careers and you were just suddenly someone presented you with this fight and, you know, you just looked on the surface, you would probably assume that Fraser's going to be the guy who wins here, is the amateur pedigree, okay, is the challenger. But look, this is on the cards, isn't it, for him to now become a British champion and progress on to bigger and better things. But that really isn't an accurate appraisal of the situation, because Wardley, although he never boxed amateur, he's actually more experienced as a professional, and in that more seasons, he's been in deeper, he's been with better opposition, he's probably gone through more situations in a fight as a professional. Really, if you look at Clark, this is probably the first fight he's having where the guy's coming to win and believing he's going to win. Like Marius Vak, yeah, experienced operator, but, you know, very much in the gatekeeper mode of his career. So he'll have a go, but he's not, you know, he knows he's taking the fight and he's supposed to lose. And if he gets caught with one or two early, he goes into that survival mode. So this really is Fraser's first proper fight as a professional, and Wardley's already had several of those.
Yeah, and that's a big differentiator between the two of them as pros. Fraser said it to us on the stream, and one thing that you picked up on there, which I think is big for him, is that this will have been the first time he's had a camp where when you get to that extra set that you don't really want to do, or you get to the end of that sprint and you need to push it that bit harder, he'll have done it this time because he'll have that fear, that little bit of ice down your spine that comes with a really big fight, that jeopardy. That's what drives you, isn't it? You and Johnny Nelson spoke to me about this at the end of last year. Fabio did too, actually. He was really interesting on it. Is that is what keeps you going, that fear of failure. And against Fabio Wardley, he will have that Fraser clock. And as you said, he hasn't had it before.
He won't be thinking about the performance. He'll be just thinking about winning. When you're boxing someone that you know you're supposed to win, is the opponent coming in, you can easily get sidetracked. You're not thinking about just winning. You start thinking about the performance and looking good and stealing the show, or can I stop him quicker than such and such a one did? You're in that mode, and when you're in that mode, you're in trouble, because then you haven't got the right sort of mental approach, the right mindset, that you haven't got enough nerves, because you're thinking the win is a given. Now you're thinking about how I win, how I look good. You know, obviously when you're doing interviews, you're going to say, yeah, I'm totally focused on this and I'm not looking past him and he's good and all that stuff. But really, you know, you're thinking about the performance. You're not thinking about just getting the win. But when you're in a proper fight, a fight that you know you can lose, a fight where people are picking you to lose, that's when you're in the right place, because that's when you're just focusing on winning. And actually, when you just focus on the winning, that's when you end up performing really well.
Yeah, and Fabio was talking to us about, I brought it up actually because I spoke to him about it towards the end of last year for the book I was just finishing at the time, and it was about camp and all those kind of aspects and how do you use that fear. And he said that for him, it is this kind of internal dialogue which he never really tries to quieten. He lets it speak, although you've got to find an answer for it, where you have a bad day and you think to yourself, am I actually any good at this? Particularly if you don't have loads of experience, which he doesn't, and you question yourself, but then you think, actually, I thought this at this exact stage of camp last time after a bad spar, and look what I did then. And then a few weeks out, it'll be something different. But what he does is he allows that devil on the shoulder to pipe up and then finds an answer to it. But it's that back and forth. You know, it sounds exhausting to me, to be honest, but I guess that's what you have to do.
Everyone has that. I remember when I split my knuckles 2 weeks out from the Martinez fight. I'd already stopped sparring because I bruised my ribs, and I'd done my knuckles then two weeks later on this body pad. I was smashing these body shots in. And anyway, I did feel something, but I didn't realise I'd done the damage. While I was in it, I didn't really realise the damage I was doing. But, you know, when I took the gloves off, you know, fairly deep contusions in the knuckles. They was really split badly. So I couldn't punch anything then for 2 weeks out. And I'm thinking, fuck's sake, you know what I mean? Like, you know, all of a sudden now you've got that negative internal dialogue going, like, oh, I've had to stop sparring. I can't do this. What about that? You know, all the doubts creeping in. And I remember messaging Joe Calzaghe, because he stopped sparring. I don't think he punched or hit anything physically for a couple of weeks out before the Lacey fight. And I mean, that was just literally as punch perfect a performance as you can get. So I was trying to source confidence from, not even based on my own personal experience, because this hadn't happened to me before. Certainly not. No, well, it hadn't happened. I hadn't been in a fight where I hadn't been able to punch at all. For 2 weeks out from the fight, let alone now I'm going into a fight where I'm the underdog, Martinez, etc. I was thinking, where can I source some reassurance, some confidence? And I remember knowing that Calzaghe didn't punch for a couple of weeks out from the Kessler fight. They were going to pull out of the fight. And Frank Warren, I think, said to him, you know, had a conversation and said, look, you know, you really need to go in this fight. Got his head back around it, talked him back into the fight. And of course, you know, thank God he did, from his point of view, because it was the best. It was the performance of his career, which actually, from an American point of view, a lot of people had, like, maybe, you know, people could say Lacey was overrated, now overhyped. But at the time, they weren't saying that.
No, they weren't.
They weren't saying that at the time. and Lace Calzaghe. I can't remember in recent times anyway, anyone dismantling anyone so destructively, so one-sided in a performance as what Joe Calzaghe put on that night. So from my point of view, I was able to source confidence. It's no, you're all right. You didn't point, but you know, even did Calzaghe, look at the performance he put on. So Fabio Wardley, everyone has bad days, by the way, you know, inspiring or whatever. And he's sitting there and he's feeling sorry for himself and the doubt and all the self-critiques in there. You're no good. You're going to get beat or whatever. And then you got the other side going, no, you listen, that happened to you, but such and such a thing, and look how well you perform there. You're always that internal dialogue, the angel and the devil. That's going on in life, never mind in boxing.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely, all the time. It's surprising how kind of relatable all this stuff is often when you think it through. Andy Scott just magisterially walking down the stairs there after comparing the press conference, which, oh. And just over our right-hand shoulder is a gentleman who appeared unannounced when Ben Whitaker was up on the stage and demanded a fight with him. I'm still not sure if we found out who he is in terms of his fighting background.
I think that's probably why he took it out on you after. that was the residue.
Well, yeah, I mean, people who watch the stream will know that Ben Whitaker had some things to say about my commentary skills because in his last fight, I did describe one of his actions as being disrespectful. He wasn't happy with that, as is his right. That's the game we're in, Matt, isn't it? It's the game we're in. And I've always been very clear on this. I get to say what I want to say. I never do it to antagonise, ever. It's never, ever personal. But people are perfectly at liberty to think and say whatever they want. It is whatever they want to say about what I say, and that's really, it's as simple as that, isn't it?
Look, at the end of the day, you know, we're commentating on the fight, and you know, we call the fight as we see it, and that's it really. There's nothing more to it than that. You call the action and you bring me in for fighters' insight, co-commentary, whatever. But you know, at the end of the day, boxers can be, I know this, my own opinion, my own personal experience as a boxer, when you're boxing, you can be quite sensitive. But when you retire and you get a bit older and a bit wiser, you realise it isn't that personal.
No, exactly. He's a terrific fighter to watch, Ben Whitaker. He's got a huge future ahead of him. We all hope that. So the very best of luck to him on Sunday night and to his opponent, Leon Willings, who has stepped up and taken this fight. I've quite enjoyed as well seeing Florian Marku and Chris Congo circle around each other ahead of this one, because they're different types of characters, but they've both been waiting for this for a long time. And in Marku, I still can't really work out where he's at in terms of his level, how good he is, because it is difficult to get a handle on it. They've both been really inactive, so there aren't too many clues as to which way that one will go. Congo, on his two biggest nights, they've both been losses against McKinson and against Echo Esserman. Marku wasn't hugely impressive in Albania on a big, big night for him. I was over there for that one. So I don't really know where I land on it. I'm not that sure, actually, what we'll see either, because everybody looks at Marku and thinks he's this kind of like wild man, this crazy man, and he's talking about an early knockout. But at Spurs, he was put in with Maxime Prodan on the AJ Usyk undercard. And Prodan's a come-forward kind of warmonger. And we thought that's what we'd get. And Marku intelligently didn't do that. He stood off, he boxed, he switched orthodox and southpaw. And although he's not tall, he's got really long arms. So I don't know with that one. It's a tricky one.
No, I agree. And I think that performance at Tottenham Hotspur was probably the best I've seen him. He boxed well, so I would imagine it'll be a boxing match to begin with. Whether or not then, I suppose depending on how the fight's going, whether Marku kind of steps it up and tries to take it to Congo, I suppose that depends whether his tactics are working or not. But I'd imagine initially it'll be a boxing match early on.
Yeah, I think so. I do wonder about Congo sometimes in the second half of the fight. Esserman's got a terrific engine, and the second half of the fight was his, and that's how he won the fight, which didn't come as a massive surprise, but he's big, Congo, for welterweight, and I just wonder what it takes out of him to make to make that weight. But again, it's, you know, it's a good matchup, as is Vidal Riley against Mikhail Lawal. And for Lawal, I feel like win, lose or draw, what he absolutely cannot do on Sunday is not really show us anything. Because against Isaac Chamberlain, and you always have to give props to the winner and say that the winner didn't allow the loser to do what it was that they wanted to do. But he will have had regrets about that fight, Lawal, because it was a real long time coming, that British title. He finally got it. And then in his first defence, headlining as well in the end, because that was that date where Buatsi and Aziz got postponed. He'll look back on that and he will surely swear to himself that is never happening again. In a big fight, if I lose, I lose. But that kind of performance, that can't happen again.
No, to lose the way he lost is the hardest thing, I think, for a boxer to kind of get his head around and come to terms with. Look, you start in a boxing career, you're going to lose. You know, the very odd one. You know, Carl Zaghi, Andre Ward. These, you know, most lose at some point. Do you know what I mean? And if you keep going long enough, you're going to get beaten eventually. And you learn and you come back, etc. But how you lose, you've got to be able to look yourself in the mirror afterwards. And if you're right, I think he'll have a lot of regrets about his performance. You know, whatever about the win or the loss, the performance, he didn't perform. If you perform and you lose, and you get beat by someone better, it's not nice, but you can live with it because you can't perform better than you can perform. But he didn't perform. He didn't even come close to performing. And he won't want to feel like that again. I think if he goes out and gives it everything he's got and he gets beaten by a better man, well, that's life. That's sport. You can live with that. But I think if he comes and performs against Vidal the way he did against Chamberlain, I think firstly, the fans, he'll get written off by everybody. I think the promoters, the television, they won't want him back in a big fight again. And I think from his own pride point of view, that more so than anything, it would kill him. So I think the fear of that happening again and his insistence to him, personally, on making sure it doesn't happen again could make him go swing from the other way, because he could end up being a little bit gung-ho and reckless and over-aggressive, and that could play into the hands of Mikhail, who's, you know, got a lovely jab and bangs, you know, it's pretty hard.
Yeah, and I think it's a perfect fight for Vidal Riley to see where he's at. But I hope we do get that from Mikhail Lawal, that kind of reaction whereby he knows that he's got to finish the fight with no regrets. That's the most important thing, because as you say, that, you know, again, in any walk of life, not just boxing, that is always the most difficult thing to live with. Let's just have a chat about being back at the O2, because we haven't been here for some time. Team Whitaker just moody passed to our right hand side. There's a spare seat here, but we've not been at the O2 for a while. Not that long ago, it felt like we were here all of the time. Basically, it's a big arena, and you need a big fight and a big card to fill it enough to really make it worth coming here. And I'm all for picking the right size place. We've had this conversation a few times, haven't we, the last year or so. But this is the right size place for this, because I think if you sell upwards of 10,000 and you're opening up that upper tier, then it's worth coming here, because you've outsold anywhere else you could have taken it.
I think even if you sell the bottom tier out, that's worth coming here. You know, even if you didn't make it to the top tier, you know, it's still a big arena just selling the lower tier. It's probably, what does it hold, the lower tier? You've got to be up to about 10,000 there, would you say, more?
I think so, yeah.
So, you know, that's a big crowd, isn't it? It's worth coming here even for that.
Yeah, exactly.
What you don't want to be doing is coming here trying to sell a show as a big arena show that isn't a big arena show, because then there's no atmosphere and you're better off going to a smaller venue and packing the place out. And even if you've got to up the price of the tickets and keeping that atmosphere, there's nothing worse than a big arena half empty.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But I think the atmosphere is going to be absolutely terrific in there on Sunday. And again, just trying out Sunday boxing. We did it in late 2022 at Alexandra Palace. I enjoyed it. The Sunday being in the middle of a bank holiday weekend, I think, helps, because the social aspect of it goes to the boxing is massive.
It's a Saturday night, isn't it?
It's essentially a Saturday night, and we're slipstreaming into it off the back of, TV-wise, off the back of Man City against Arsenal, which again, you know, is a good thing, because you want to keep that, you want to keep that audience over. And these are all the kinds of things that TV and promoters are always thinking about, because you want maximum exposure for these fighters, because that's how you build rivalries. Let's say it's an absolute ding dong on Sunday, and everybody decides, we're going to have to see that again. Then with a big audience, who knows what the next one could be? We talk about this quite a bit, don't we? Things appear from nowhere sometimes if you've made the real effort on that side
of
it.
Well, look at the thing that Ben Whitaker did in his last fight, and it went viral because someone who was doing the editing for ESPN happened to see that, and he played it out on the Sports Center,
I think, yeah.
So all of a sudden now it's gone viral, and he's, you know, now, like you say, the platform opportunity, I see in you. Sunday, that's going to, you know, the football, it's a huge game, it's going to be massive viewing figures. You know, hopefully they stay on, which I think most will. If they stayed in towards the football, the you know, the boxing's on after as well. Yeah, we'll have a night of sport, isn't it? And all of a sudden, you know, Ben Whitaker looks $1 million again. His profile goes through the roof. Then goes, you know, I know then we've got Congo and Marco. Hopefully that fight catches fire, even if it's not, you know, a war of attrition, but even if it's a good absorbing boxing match, it keeps the viewers, because listen, the boxing hardcore are going to watch regardless. We're talking about the casual guys that might watch a fight, might not, whatever. You want to bring them on, you want them to stay tuned in for the Fabio Wardley Fraser Clark, and then, you know, it could be massive viewing figures. And if it is massive viewing figures and it's a really good fight, whoever wins that fight's a star.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And these are, you know, these are all the things you have to think about, particularly these days where, thankfully, there are numerous platforms and everybody's looking to build their own fighters, build their own stars, and it's not that easy a thing to do. Yeah, you have to put the time in.
Listen, I'm biased, we're biased, but, you know, Sky is the biggest platform in the UK. Sky is the biggest platform, you know, because of what's happening on Sunday, coming off the back of the Premier League big match, Arsenal Man City. You know, how many people were watching that match?
It's hard to say. I mean, it's got to be well over a million, you think. I mean, pubs as well, you know, everywhere.
Yeah,
it's a lot.
So, you know, it's going to be huge. So, if you can then keep those viewers engaged, and like you say, boxing's that mad sport, isn't it? Whereby every man can relate to two men having a fight. You know, before any sports, go back to the gladiatorial days of the Colosseum, you know, for entertainment. Everyone knows what's happening here. You don't have to explain what's happening, two men having a fight. You know what I mean? Like in football, you got to understand the offside, or, you know, in American football, what's happening here? How many plays do they get? How come they lost the ball? Why are they getting, no, they're allowed five goes or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like two men, one trying to knock the other one out. Anyone can see what's happening here.
No, that's it. That's it. And it's a massive advantage that we have, because you could just flick on a fight, or like you say, stay off the back of a football match to watch a fight. And if it's a good fight, then you'll just keep watching it. And if in the build-up you can give people a little sense of who's who and what they're about, then you might pick a team. You might think, well, I kind of prefer it if this guy won. And then you get behind them. And that's what it's about. But it's that simplicity of it as being something that everyone recognises is and always has been this big selling point. Because I remember watching a David Beckham thing he did where he went into the Amazon. They were journeying into the Amazon, and I think they were playing football on every continent or something like that, and they ended up in the Amazon, and he's in this village and they didn't know what football was. And so probably for the first time in his life, he had to explain what a footballer was, because they asked him, what do you do? And he said, I'm a footballer. And they said, what's that? And he had to explain it, and he was entertaining on it. They spoke to him afterwards, the Doco crew, and they basically said to him, so what happened there? And he said, yeah, he said, I had to explain what football is. I don't think I did a very good job. Because if you think about it, if you did have to explain it, it would be quite hard.
Well, what it is.
It's just a really difficult thing to do. And that dynamic is something that definitely plays into our hands, but especially at heavyweight. Because the jeopardy at heavyweight is there for all to see, isn't it?
Well, look, we were in Saudi a few weeks ago, and when you see a big guy hitting the deck heavy, it's fucking brutal, isn't it?
It is. It is. That's the only word for it. It's this kind of like shocking thing, and I kind of feel like we probably will see somebody get stopped on Sunday.
Yeah, look, I think it'll start off relatively cagey. I don't think anyone's going to come out swinging. I think it'll start off relatively cagey, but I do think it'll ignite at some point.
Yeah, agreed. And as we've been saying, the fascinating thing about it is that you can take information and make it fit whatever your argument is and make that argument convincing. Because, I mean, where do you stand on the discussion around to what extent your amateur experience counts when you're a professional? Because Johnny didn't write it off, Johnny Nelson, when we were chatting on the stream, but he did say, look, I had 13 amateur fights and I lost 10 of them, and look what I did. And there's no arguing with that. But at the same time, if you've travelled all over the world and you've boxed these high-level opponents and you've been under a lot of pressure, because the Olympics is a lot of pressure, and in his last amateur fight, Fraser boxed Bakadir Jalolov, who I would say is a top 10 heavyweight. Okay, that was over three rounds, and he didn't win. You know, you need to make that point. You don't just walk into a pro gym and lay that to one side and it counts for nothing. You know, it does count.
Look, he's over the whatever. Is he 31 now? I think he's 31. Is he? Or is he 32? 31.
I think he might be 32 by now.
Yeah, but you know, over his, however many years he's been boxing. At all the levels, he's consistently gone in there and won. You know, because if he didn't keep winning, he wouldn't have kept progressing to the next level. At the end of the day, in the amateurs, he did win a medal at the Olympic Games. You know, he's won many WSB. He's had lots of, again, and they're top level fighters, because everyone, it's like in boxing, as you go, it's like the best of the best, isn't it? The best, you know, your area, then you win your national title, then you go abroad to the European Championship. So it's the best against the best. And like, so he's constantly gone in, stepped through the ropes, gone into a ring and came out on top to as an amateur to achieve what he's achieved. Now, okay, that doesn't just go away because you turned professional. Do you know what I mean? The assets or the experience that you picked up. The only thing that's different is, yes, the refereeing is a bit is stricter in the amateurs. Like, they'll pull you up on certain, you know, you duck down a certain way, and you know what I mean. So technically, you can be a bit more rough around the edges as a professional. You can be a bit smoother. Technically, it's more textbook in the amateurs, because you get pulled up by the referee. Thing, you know, for breaking rules, if you duck down below the belt with your head and this type of thing. So it's But ultimately, Fraser's, you know, gone in there with another man in the other corner that's coming out to have the better of him. And he's had the better of them a lot more times than he hasn't. That's why he achieved what he achieved in the amateurs. Now, Wardley hasn't been competing at anywhere near that kind of level for anywhere near as long. But for as long as he has been competing, he's been coming out on top.
Yeah, he has. He has. And you can tell that he really enjoys fight week. I don't think he invests too much energy in trying to just find some little weak points with his opponent. He just does it purely for his own entertainment. And I think that's quite a fortunate natural disposition to have, because fight week can be pretty dull for fighters, I think, watching you all go through it. And if you can just genuinely enjoy it without any real expectation of trying to score points, you're just entertaining yourself. It's kind of, if you're like that, I think that's quite lucky.
I think the more laid back and relaxed you can be and not take yourself too seriously and, you know, don't have too much, you know, try and keep your ego in check, then it's going to be an easier week for you, isn't it? If you're highly strong and intense and a bit sensitive or emotional, then you can get easily triggered by people, and then it could be quite a long week. But the one good thing heavyweights but I've going for them is, when it comes to fight week, is they ain't got to worry about making weight. I mean, I think for most boxers outside of the heavyweight division, that obviously adds a lot of stress.
Yeah, I'd say so. Okay, well, we'll wind it up there. This was always going to be a short one. And as I said, it's a little bit later in the week than normal, but this is kind of more how we'll do it now. We'll pull the kit out of the bag and hit record as and when, wherever we are, whenever we get the opportunity. We will be back again before too long. We'll be back hopefully early next week to have a look back on what happened on on Sunday night. That one might come out next week a little bit later as well, because we got the bank holiday and all sorts of things. And then we hit in April, which is quite quiet. And then May is absolutely off the charts, isn't it? It's just going to be so busy. From our point of view, Lauren Price in Cardiff on the 11th. Then I think the next day, basically, off to Saudi for Fury Usyk. And then I think we go home for a couple of days. And then we're both off out to Poland for what could be a very interesting trip to see a Coley fight for that Bridgeweight world title. I can't wait for it.
I'll be very popular in my house.
Yeah, no, me too.
Not.
Yeah, no, I'd go, yeah. I've already had the conversation. I got in there quite early. I know that you've bottled it so far, basically, haven't you? And I completely understand why. I completely understand why you have, but yeah, you're going to have to rip off the Band-Aid and get that done sooner rather than later, I think. Okay, everybody, thanks for listening. We will catch you again next time. Yes, that line forms on the right, babe. Not that Mackey's back in town.
Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.